Yes, sir. Thank you for taking a ride on the Freedom Train Podcast series. I am your host, Joseph Ward, and right now I'm riding solo. Joining me later will be, of course, my co-host, Mr. Patrick Irvin. The Freedom Train is brought to you by PAX Inc., and that's PACTSINC. And remember, PAX Inc. is a black advocacy organization aimed at developing the black community to its maximum potential through a focus on education and economics with the traits of hard work, honesty, and integrity. So for more information, make sure you visit www.pactsinc.org to learn more about the organization, members of the organization, and everything that they are doing in relation to the black community. And also make sure you click on the tab that says The Code so you can learn more about the 12 Codes of Conduct that PAX Inc. have created for black America. Of course, you know, while you're online, make sure you visit our Freedom Train website at www.freedomtrainradio.com so you can learn more about myself, Patrick, Jamie, and the host of other shows that we have coming up. So make sure you look out for, of course, the Fix Sports Podcast, as well as our new shows that are coming to the network, Office Hours with Professor Carl Tone Jones and Erica Tolbert, as well as Tea Time, Black Women's Talk with Erica Blackshear, Mia Mizak, Monique Gamble, and Tammy Houston Irvin. So we got a lot of good things coming up on the Freedom Train Network. Make sure you follow us on Twitter at Freedom Train Net. Follow us on Instagram at Freedom Train Network. Subscribe to our Freedom Train Network YouTube channel. Like our Freedom Train Network Facebook page. And, you know, last but not least, subscribe to not only the Freedom Train podcast series, but also the Fix Sports podcast on iTunes and Google Play. That way you can learn more about what we have going on. So today's guest, greatly want to thank this guest for being here. She's definitely been patient with us. Miss Patrice Torres is our guest today. But before we get more into what she has going on, I'm going to give you a little bit of background information. So Patrice has a background in education. She worked in the field for a decade in higher education, middle and high school. She holds undergraduate degrees in digital filmmaking and screenwriting and a Master of Arts in teaching. She has worked both in front of the camera as well as behind the camera. She managed to do this part-time along with education for the same length of time. Patrice is a lover of words, so writing is one of her favorite things. She also enjoys sharing her knowledge and her stories. Helping others come second nature to her. So when her son wanted to write a book at the age of 9, she saw to it that it happened. Using her teaching experience came in handy in showing him how to create his own book from conception to completion. After coaching her teenager through scholarship, research, college entry exams, money management, and revisiting life skills lessons, she knew she could help other parents and students. Thus, her most recent book was created. And without further ado, I would like to welcome Ms. Patrice Torres to the Freedom Train Podcast series.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me.
No problem. Thank you a million times for being on here and sharing your information and your story with us. So therefore, our audience can learn more about what you have going to be able to support you, but also not just support you, but that way your books and all of the information that you have could definitely help somebody. So thank you for being here.
It's a pleasure.
Yes, ma'am. So I want to go ahead and get into this interview so our audience can learn a little more. So I know I just made that introduction, but can you give our audience a little more background information about yourself? And how did you manage to become an educator, a film writer, and an author?
Sure. Well, I've always loved stories, reading movies, and basically sharing what I know. I feel like if I have information, what good is it if I only use it for myself and I don't share that information with others? So after working at a university and helping people, you know, through admissions process, I realized that an overwhelming number of those people, like I'd hear so many times them say to me, oh, man, if I only knew back then, you know, what I know now, I appreciate this. And that's when, after hearing it so many times, I decided to go back and essentially get my master's in teaching that I could reach those students before they got to that stage, because oftentimes I worked with a lot of adult learners. So that's how I got into the field of, well, into education further, I should say, working with the youth.
Okay. And then it kind of trickled into you working with the adults, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So well, actually, the adults came first.
The
adults came first, and then after working with them, I realized that, you know what, I need to get to the youth, and that's how I ended up going back to get my master's.
Okay.
And earning a teacher certification.
Okay. So let me ask you, what's the biggest difference between educating the adults and the children? What were some of the things that you may have found disturbing that you discovered in working with both groups, especially within our community?
Well, with the adults, the big thing for me, it was really disheartening to know to realize what they didn't know. And it was because a lot of it wasn't provided. The information wasn't provided. Oftentimes, I think that, you know, they weren't prepared, even some of them. And I know that there's, you know, a lot of times when I was working at the university, you're working with people who, wonderful people, but they hadn't had, you know, a lot of practice in school. And when they were in school, so many of them said, you know, it wasn't such a good experience. I was young and I didn't know. And there were so many things that they missed out on because they weren't educated. So I think that both are hungry for knowledge, but the big difference is that the adults have had time to have life experience. And so for them, that knowledge, they're more thirsty sometimes. Not always, because you do have some youth that are pretty thirsty for knowledge, but a lot of times the adults are more thirsty for it.
Yeah, and I agree, because I know as an adult myself, my thirst for knowledge has increased. I want to know more. I have so many why questions, because it seems like, you know, as adults, when children are small and they're asking those questions, well, why is this, why is that, why is this, why is that? I know sometimes, sometimes the adults may get annoyed, but the child is very inquisitive, so that inquisitive nature could be suppressed when they're young, because they're so used to somebody telling them, well, stop asking questions, get away from me. So it's interesting that you say that.
Absolutely. Okay. I think that's what we do. We discourage that because we feel as though it is annoying and it's a waste of our time. Why are they asking this question? Oh, my gosh, why? When really we need to be encouraging that and say, you know what, keep asking questions.
Right. Okay, so one more question I have as far as the education realm. So what are some of the biggest issues that you have noticed What's up?
I got a question.
Uh-oh. Patrick is on the line. What's up, Patrick?
I was fighting with the mute button.
Go ahead.
I think you won.
Yeah.
I know, right?
I was like, wait, stop. Wait. Be quiet, Joe. Stop. So I got a question, though. So you guys were talking about the inquisitive nature of children, and I was wondering, when it comes to that, like, what do you think? Should we be directly answering their questions, or should we be encouraging them to research and find their own answers to their questions?
I think it should be a combination of both, honestly. I mean, I think that sometimes, to be honest with you, my son will ask questions that sometimes I don't know the answer to. So you know what I do? I go online and I look it up, because I would hate to tell him the wrong thing. So I go online and I look it up, and I say, If I know the answer, I'll tell him. If I don't, I say, you know what, let's look it up. So you have to show him. So we can't just say, go look it up. You got to show him. Sometimes I think that we forget to do that. We always say, go do this, go do that. But we haven't modeled that behavior, and I think that's really key, is to encouraging them, absolutely, but also modeling it and showing them and not being afraid to show them not necessarily a weakness, but a vulnerability, I guess, in that, you know, we don't know everything.
Yeah.
But we know how to get it.
No, but I agree, because it's very shocking and depressing when you find out that your parents don't know everything.
Mm-hmm.
And then as you get older, when you find out how much they don't know, it's like, oh, okay, wow. So I do like your approach to that. All right. So the question I was asking was about some of the biggest issues that you've noticed. So you say you work with black youth, black children. So can you tell us about some of the biggest issues that you've noticed that black children face when it comes to education and just children just trying to thrive? And what are some, in your opinion, what are some of the best ways that we can help those children to thrive?
Well, I think the biggest overall is a lack of expectation and self-efficacy. I mean, that's huge. I don't think we expect enough from our kids. I don't think that educators expect enough from our kids. And that poses a problem, because what happens is our kids are going to rise to whatever level of expectation we set for them. And if we set the bar low, then that's where they're going to be. And we're going to be wondering, okay, why don't they know more? Why aren't they learning more, excelling? Well, look where we set the bar. And I think that is a big problem. And I don't know if it's that it's more inner city or what. It's just, we don't have the expectations that we should. And I think that some of the ways that we can combat that is to seek resources. You've got to tell your kids also that you're proud of them. You got to reassure them that they can do it. You know, if you don't, they're not going to think that they can do it, because we don't know what they're hearing at the school.
True.
We don't know if the teachers are telling them, don't worry about that little Johnny, you know. That, you know, don't worry about that. That's older than what you are, and, you know, you'll get to that at some point, instead of encouraging that. And oftentimes when we do that, it kind of, it sets the kids back, and it happens way too often. You know, I know that we talk a lot of times about, you know, as a society, we're always talking about education, there being a lack of funding, and, you know, sometimes that's the case, but, you know, sometimes it could be mismanagement, it could be a lot of things, but generally, the biggest thing that I see is that we don't expect enough from our kids, and we don't tell them that they can be anything that they want to be.
Right.
Yes.
Now.
Yes. Yes.
Oh, go ahead, Pat.
Yeah. Hey, that what the girls say nowadays? Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah,
you're home on that one. There you go.
Yeah. Well, whatever it is. I just, bunny ears, girl, no, yes. Not, but that's because we talk, because I believe in expectations, and I'm, you know, like when you look, like you said, you look around, you see the world, and you see kids that are living up to the expectations that people have of them, and then you realize that people don't have any expectations of them, and that's what they're living up to. That was a very powerful point you just made. I just wanted to make sure that we didn't just gloss over that and jump into the next part of the conversation. No, I want, you know, you guys, if you're listening to this, rewind that section back and listen to what she just said again. We're not going to wait because you're rewinding it, but definitely.
But also, I want to.
One quick
thing.
Go ahead. In that, when I talk about seeking resources, sometimes the school's not, they don't necessarily know. I mean, they do have some resources. But as parents, we can seek out our own resources. We've got so much information at the touch of our hands. There's everything online, just about everything you can imagine, some things that shouldn't be, but then there's a lot of things that should be online. There's YouTube channels. Like, I just found a YouTube channel, and I'm like, hey, this is awesome. So my son's looking like, oh, great, what else does she find? But there's so many different types of things that you can find online. YouTube, how to do this. There's, you know, math, science, literature. There's all kinds of things. There's tutorial services. Some are free. Some are not. But those are things. And the parents, it's so important that you become an advocate for your child.
Yes.
Communicate with the teachers. It's important, because if you don't, they're just going to go through, and you're not going to know what they know. So that's how we can also help to set that expectation.
But you also said one thing, too, is you don't know what your child is being told at school, whether it's by the teachers or by other students. So and I know conversations, but I was a child, and I know I would tell, sometimes I would tell my mom what I wanted her to know. So as someone like me who's going to be a parent, and for parents now, how do you get that information out of your child? Like if your child is really having issues at school, how do you get to a point to where your child is not afraid to open up to you and tell you what's going on at school, whether it's good or bad?
Well, you need to become an actor. And what I mean by that is you've got to put on a face, because sometimes you're going to hear things that you do not want to hear. Like for example, with my son, I ask him often, actually every day when I pick him up, how was school? The same. Okay. I keep rewording that question until I get what I'm looking for. And sometimes there's nothing, but you have to keep asking. You have to definitely keep asking. And then you need to be in contact with the teachers. I email the teachers. And I go in before, you know, the school starts. Like if there's a meet your teachers night, I'm there. I want to talk to all the teachers. They need to see my face, and they need to know that little boy belongs to me. And because of that, you're going to see my face. You're going to hear me. I'm going to expect you to reach out to me. But I also tell them this. We're a team.
Mm-hmm.
What you do affects my child. And because he is the most important thing right now, we need to make sure that we're teaming together to make sure he gets what he needs. What you need from me, you need to let me know. And what I need from you, I'm going to let you know. So we've got to be upfront like that, but we also need to be open to hear what the kids have to say, even what the teachers say, not necessarily believing everything from both sides, because like you said, kids sometimes will say what they want to, you know, what you want to hear, but then I wouldn't always say that, you know, teachers are always forthcoming either.
Right.
So you have to talk to your kids, and you've got to like keep a straight face. You can't get upset when you hear something that you don't want to hear, because then they become afraid and they're like, oh God, she's gonna embarrass me in front of the school. And so you've got to just maintain this level of calmness and let them tell you. Now you could be screaming inside at what you hear, and you may need to take actions, but you keep your emotions at bay, so that your student knows that it's safe to come and talk to you.
Okay.
Right. See, and one of the things I like that you pointed out, in dealing with a lot of my kids' teachers, we've definitely found out that your children will definitely tell you things that they think you want to hear, but teachers are in that same boat sometimes, most times, from my experience. Well, they'll tell you what they think you want to hear as a parent, even if they have something that's not necessarily positive to say about your child, they'll try to sandwich it between some other things and slide it in there instead of just giving you the real. I want to ask you something real quick about something that you did mention about being an actor, which is funny because I often think about parenting in terms of manipulation, like, you know, playing the long game, playing the long con. You know, in terms of getting my kids to believe this or believe that. So I grew up constantly being reminded that my mom was not my friend. And that I agree with that to an extent. But with my children, what I've tried to do is, okay, I'm not your friend, because you're never going to be able to talk to me the same way you talk to those little kids running around your school. But I can't be friendly with you. So I wanted to know, what do you think on that parenting dynamic between a parent that's their friend, a true friend to their child? Do you think like that's something that's acceptable, or is that something that can be worked within the parent-child relationship model? Like, I just want to hear your thoughts about that in general.
Okay. Are you sure?
Yes, I do.
honestly, and this may sound a little crazy, but hear me out. I am my child's friend, both of my children. So I have a college student now, full-time college student, and I have a younger student. I am their friend. I'm not their buddy. The difference, and I tell them this, so my daughter, she's an adult now, a young adult, but she calls me her best friend. She can come to me, but she knows that I wear different hats, and she knows that I'll always be her friend because she needs to know that she can trust me and that she can come to me.
Mm-hmm.
But she knows I'm not her buddy, so I'm not going to tell her what she wants to hear. I'm going to tell her what she needs to hear. And a true friend will do that. And that's why, for me, I tell my kids, you know what? I am your friend. I'm your confidant. Tell me. I need to know so that I can protect you, so I can advocate for you, but I won't let you just slide by. I will hold you accountable, and that's what a true friend does. Now, above that, I always tell them, you know, I'm the mom. I'm the boss, applesauce, so I'm going to make the ultimate decision, but we can handle this in a way where we've got this camaraderie where you come to me, we work things out together, but you'll never hear me tell you what you want to hear. You'll hear unless it's what you need to hear.
I can go with that because I think that component of being friends, friendly, I like the way you use that. I'm your friend, but I'm not your buddy. I never thought about
right.
that before. I like that.
Right.
But no matter what approach you choose to take, if you're not at least friendly or positive to children, they're never going to want to open up to you. They're never going to feel the desire or urge to open up to you. So I think, and that dynamic is hard to adjust with so many people being raised to believe, you know, are being, you know, their dynamic with their parents. I'm the parent. I'm not your friend. You want somebody to be your friend, go to blah, blah, blah. You know, you got all those going on, but then when it's time for them to open up to you or, you know, feel confident sharing intimate things with you, they don't because you're not their friend. But I
exactly.
really do. I like the way you did the whole buddy-friend thing. I might steal that.
That's okay. That's okay.
Copyright.
At the end of the day, that's what we want, you know. We want to raise a different nation, like a different generation. And we want to do it with some of the values that we had growing up because I know that this generation is different. But in the same token, we want to put a twist on it. Like, you know, I don't want – my kids will not be that to be seen and not heard. Uh-uh. Because I remember what it felt like to be seen and not heard. And I remember thinking, okay, that does not make sense. This adult is not making a good decision, but they want me mm-hmm. to watch them and hear them.
Right.
And I'm like, you know what, I won't do that to my child. So there's definitely, you know, we definitely talk about, you know, consequences and different things like that. And they understand my role, but they also understand theirs.
Yes, ma'am. So I want to ask you this, as an educator who's also an author, so as we stated earlier, and you've recently published a book about life skills, and your book is titled Life Skills and College Planning Made Easy, Everything a Teen Needs to Know. So taking into consideration everything we've already been talking about, can you tell us about your book and how did you come about creating this book, and you know how do you expect this book to help those who read it?
Well, I wrote the book out of need, basically. So last year I had a graduating senior, and I'd been doing things, I guess, to some people a little unorthodox in terms of how I raise my kids. You know, different things like my kids, they were both like child actors and models, and so they would get their paychecks, and, you know, it's like, okay, this goes into your college fund. You'll get a certain percentage of it. The rest of it goes into there, and when it's time to go to school, you'll have money. So I didn't take their checks to the bank.
Mm-hmm.
I took them to the bank to take their checks to the bank. They sign their own checks. They look at the receipt. They see how much their balance is. So I would always do things like that. I never did the whole gaga-goo-goo, you know, thing with my kids. I always loved on them, of course.
Right.
But it was always different things like that. Like when my daughter was little, we're playing Barbies. We're sewing clothes together. She's learning a life skill. She knows how to sew. You know, cooking. All right, let's have some fun in the kitchen. So I thought about all those things when I was trying to, when she was a freshman in high school, and I started thinking, okay, how prepared, you know, is she? So when we got to senior year, I started thinking about all the things that I had done and all the things that I was advised not to do, but I said, I'm going to do it anyways. And so that's kind of how the book came about. When I started doing a serious reflection, and I noticed that there wasn't, there were resources out there, but nothing was put together as one. And so that's essentially how the book was created and why, so that I could help other people.
Okay. Now, one of the things I also do in my time is I'm a life skills trainer. I get into life skills, so I understand the importance of life skills. And one of the reasons why I got into it is because life skills help me get to the next level. So, I mean, why do you think so many of our youth, especially our black youth, lack life skills?
Because they're not being taught. You know, it boils back to that whole expectation thing. You know, we're thinking, and you know what happens? You know, you can't always fault the parents. You can't. What happens is life. Life happens, and we get out here, and we get so busy, and we say, okay, next week, you know, we're going to do this. You know, and the next week comes and you don't do it. And the thing is, we forget about those little things that we need to be showing our kids. We forget that we need to show them how to balance a checkbook. We forget that we need to talk to them about balancing their, you know, about, you know, managing their money. You know, what happens when, you know, when you were little, did you, what did Mama say? Mama always said, you know what, that money's burning a hole in your pocket. Did we talk to our kids about how to keep the money in our pocket and having those conversations where we go out and we weigh the pros and the cons as to whether or not they should buy things like that? You know, we haven't talked to our kids about, you know, health insurance, life insurance, things that they really need to know. And that's one of the big things is that we don't think about it. And it's not for a lack of wanting to. I think overall that's not the thing. I think it's that we don't realize that they don't know.
Right. Because it seems like we just caught up on the everyday things.
Exactly.
And not necessarily looking long-term of what can be brought to the table by our children. Because, and I say this a lot, I think some parents, and I don't mean to be disrespectful, but I do think some parents, they look at their children as, okay, well, you can save the family. And so especially like if your child is an athlete, a superior athlete, especially as a young person, you can save the family. So they prepare them for this one thing, but no real life skills. So even matriculating through athletics, the lacking of life skills will kind of hold them back. That's why, to me, some of them are not really prepared to go to those next levels, because life skills can help in many different ways, but I don't think a lot of people really look at them in that realm, or even if they really realize what life skills are.
You know, you're so right, because I agree with you wholeheartedly. I mean, that's the problem. I think that what happens is they look and they say, okay, like you said, you can save the family, but they didn't tell them how not to spend all that money.
Right.
You get this money, you need to invest it. You need to do this. Okay, how about we have a backup plan when you go to college? So, okay, you're a collegiate athlete. Great. All right, so let's see. You need to have a backup plan. So what's your major? Athletics, you want to do something like in physical therapy? Okay, great. You need to have a business degree as a minor, because what happens if you get hurt on the field? Those are the types of things that we're not thinking about, and I think some of it is learned. You know, we don't realize that in order to help our kids, we need to help them. And that's the big disadvantage, because what happens is, like you said, they're unprepared. They depend on other people to give them information, and they trust these people. And sometimes they're not necessarily exactly, you know, the most trustworthy person. And so they end up making a series of mistakes that probably could have been prevented, at least some of them, because they just didn't know.
We
exactly. Gotta, I mean, go ahead. I'm just gonna say I know myself. I'm still, and I've gotten over it, but I try to use my experience coming out of high school to help others. And I know other men who gone through the same experience that I have, because coming out of high school, I had no idea how to get to college. I had no idea what to do next. And I went to FAMU because my parents was basically like, well, this is school we paying for. And to me, going to college was better than not going to school and selling drugs, because I didn't know how to do that either. So, no life skills.
Yeah, we don't know. I mean, you know what? That makes me think back to when we were talking about, like, the differences and, like, who's more hungry. You know one thing that's really, really sad, and I'm saying this because I want the people to hear this, especially in our community, because that's where I see it a lot. If these kids graduate high school and don't go right to college, let's say they want to take a year or two off, well, you know what happens. A year or two off becomes 3 or 4 years, and then it becomes 5 or 6 years, and then they go back. We haven't told them that they have the option to register for selective services, right?
Right.
Now, it's a choice, but what happens with financial aid is if you don't register by the age of 25, it's going to be very difficult to get into college or to get financial aid, because it's a requirement. You're not told that because you didn't go to school right after. So there was no FAFSA that said, okay, are you registered, this, that, and the other, none of that. And I saw that so many times, especially in our community when I was helping adult learners. And the struggle was real, trying to get them, you know, to get the aid that they needed to go back, because they were never told.
Yeah, isn't that like a federal law that you have to register for selective services or something like that, if you're a male anyways?
Yeah.
You're required to.
Yeah.
You're required to, but like I said, if you don't go to school right out of high school, who tells you?
Yeah, they should be. I mean, I went to the military, so I was covered. But you're right. I didn't. Nobody, and that's something that they really should tell you in high school. But you know, you go back, and we need to realize that the vast majority of the things our kids pick up from us are nonverbal. They get them from just watching us do what we do throughout our daily lives. So chances are, if your child has never seen you balance a checkbook, they're not even going to have the slightest inclination that that's something that they need to learn how to do, or something they need to, you know, if they see you blowing money, splurging, all, like, that's what they're learning. So, but because the last time we did a interview with you, and I know the audience doesn't know, but this is our third try, and she's been amazingly gracious throughout this entire process.
Oh, yeah.
but the last time we did the interview, you guys got into a real nice discussion about life skills being common sense versus common knowledge and all that other stuff. And I didn't want that piece to be left out of this next discussion, because I felt like that was a very good piece. So I'm going to ask the exact same question. Obviously, I don't expect the answer to be exactly verbatim word for word, but I did want you to be able to share your thoughts on that matter again. So, are life skills and common sense the same thing? Go.
Not necessarily. Not necessarily. I think that life skills oftentimes are more common knowledge, or at least they should be, because we're talking about, okay, now we could argue that, right? We could argue that, you know, if you write up a bunch of checks and you don't have the money in the bank, now you're writing rubber checks, right? We could argue that that might be common sense, told you not to do that. But if you've never been told that, and you don't know because you see mom and dad popping out, you know, the what we think is a credit card. It might be a debit or it might be a credit card. We see them popping that out. We haven't explained to them that in order for them to use a debit card, they got to put money in the bank. In order for them to use a credit card, they have to have been trustworthy and pay their credit, you know, pay their credit card bill when it comes. So I think it's more of a common knowledge thing. I think common sense to me is when you see, you know, little Johnny doing something that he shouldn't be doing. That's more of a common sense thing. But when we look at life skills, those are things that they need to be taught. They need to learn how to cook. They need to learn how to sew. You know, I mean, you can figure some of these things out, absolutely. But I think that there's a difference between them in that we can't really put life skills necessarily in the category of common sense. We've got to put it in common knowledge. And then we have to make it common knowledge by sharing that information with our kids.
Right. All right. Joe, your turn. Go.
You crazy. But nah, that's real, though, because without those skills, you're going to be behind. And a lot of us were behind, and a lot of us are getting behind because we lack those basic skills that we should know. So transition a little bit, because you're multifaceted. So as well as being an author of a life skills book, you are also a filmmaker. So can you tell us about some of the projects that you've been involved with, some of the projects that you are involved with now, and how did your background as an educator and a writer translate into you making films?
Well, education has always been helpful to me because I've been a seeker of knowledge, especially more so in my adult years. Having the education and knowing what the process is like as a filmmaker has helped me to make sure that I know what's happening. I know what's going on. If I don't know the information, I know how to get the information. And so that's always been at, like, that's the foundation of everything for me, is just knowing. And it doesn't mean you necessarily have to go and get your education, you know, at a brick and mortar. That's what I did, but then I learned a lot from the School of Hard Knocks, getting out there, doing things, and, you know, not being what we would call green. But
right. Yeah, no, being green.
But some of the projects that I've worked on, a lot of them, because, you know, I did this more part-time, so a lot of them were things like I worked with the university on videos for our learners. So that was a lot of things, and I worked most of the time behind the scenes with them, where, you know, you pretty much wear a lot of hats. You know, you can be a grip, you know, you can do a lot of things. You know, holding that mic up for a long time, the shotgun mic, it gets to be a lot. But it's fun. I love it. Some of the other things that I've done besides working at the university in front of the camera, I've done some Target things, like a lot of industrial things like Target, Best Buy, Life Touch. So, you know, some of their training videos, I've done some of those. And it's kind of funny because once one of my, I think she was a senior at the time, she was like, "Ms. Torres, I didn't know you worked for Target." And I'm like, "I don't. What?" You know, I didn't think about it. And she's like, "I just started." And she's like, "I just saw you on a video. Oh, my gosh." So it's kind of cool when you know, you kind of get recognized by your kids for things like that. But those are some of the things that I've done in the past. And I'm kind of transitioning back into doing more writing. I just finished a screenplay not too long ago, and okay. I am revamping one that was up for option, but it kind of fell through, so I'm kind of hoping that, you know, I can, you know, get this one out there. It was one of my baby projects, and so I'm really hoping that I can, you know, tweak it a little bit and get it back out there and see what we can have happen. So I'm just kind of like in the process of now creating my stories.
Okay.
Some I'll make, some I won't.
Right. No, I got it. So for somebody who's interested in getting into film, and for right now, their only knowledge is what somebody may have told them or what they've seen on TV or YouTube, from your experience of actually working in the industry, working both in the front and behind the camera, like, what's the major difference in working in front of the camera and behind the camera? And in your opinion, which one is more difficult?
I'm going to say neither are easy. First of all, if you're in front of the camera, you're going to have everybody in the crew looking at you. They're going to be watching you. the camera's going to be watching you. You have to ignore the camera unless you're breaking the fourth wall. So neither job, because you're both on set for such a long time. The crew typically has to be there a couple of hours before. So that's a tough job, because in between, like when the actors are taking a break, when we don't need them or we're doing a different scene, you got to set up. And lighting makes such a huge difference. So I'm not going to say either one is easier, because they both require two totally different skill sets. What I will say is that if you wanted to become one or the other, it's important to know both, because you need to understand, like let's say that you are behind the camera, so you're part of the film crew. You need to understand the dynamics of acting and how it works before you ask for something that doesn't make sense from an actor.
Okay.
And then the other thing is this, and this is critical. Overnight successes are 10 years in the making.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
could you please say that again?
Overnight successes are 10 years in the making. So you go out, you see a movie, and, you know, it looks exciting. You're like, oh, hey, I'm going to go look at that. That looks good, right? We see the person and we say, it says introducing such and such, right? So we think they're an overnight success. We didn't see all the blood, sweat, and tears that went into that. We didn't see all the auditions that they went on and they were told no. We didn't see all the times that they were working on their craft and honing their skills, all the classes that they went to, whether it be at a university or whether they went to an acting school or whether they were running lines with other people. We didn't see that. And so in doing anything that, I'm just going to say just in general, anything worth having is worth working for, so you have to put in the work. And the larger the area, like for film, the bigger the competition, more competition. But don't get into that whole thing with competition. Always be helpful, because then you don't want to develop you don't want to be known as the person who people can't work with, because then you're not going to work. So make yourself teachable and work hard and realize that you're not going to get everything. You need to have tough skin, because you're going to hear things that you don't want to hear that may not even be true about yourself. But you need to know that you answer to, like, what someone calls you, you don't have to answer to. That's important, too. And I know I'm throwing a lot of different things out there, but it's so important to know that you can't just wake up one day and say, you know what, I want to be an actor or I want to be a filmmaker. You need to educate yourself. If you can't go to school, you need to find a way. Go online. There's tons and tons of videos online. There's tons of material. There's books. We got a library. You can go and get books in there. Join network groups so that you learn. Ask questions, but do research. Because sometimes people are going to say, did you look it up? You got to look it up. Be willing to share what you know and don't hoard that information either. And then just put in the work. Does that answer your question?
Yes, ma'am, it does. I do want to say this, because I think one of the things now, especially nowadays, that challenges, because I think everything you said is correct, but I think one thing that challenges that is the advent of social media, and how one day somebody can be on social media doing one thing that's just crazy or over the top, and the next day they're getting a production deal for this or this or that. So what do you say to somebody who is telling you, well, I don't have to do none of that, I could just go on Facebook or Instagram and become famous? So what do you say to that person?
Great. I hope it works out for you. I mean, I really do. I've always been a firm believer in, if someone's doing great, celebrate it. It doesn't always have to be my victory in order to celebrate. But also, I'm in touch with reality, and I know that that doesn't happen for everyone. And again, we don't know how long it took them to go on social media, how many videos they had to create, and how did they put their content together. I mean, that right there is preparation in and of itself. So they didn't just go on and say, okay, let's do a quick video. And if they did, that's great, but it's not the norm. And so knowing that, it just means you know you've got to put in extra work.
Yeah, I was there was a book that I read that first opened my eyes to the process involved in any kind of success. It was called Outliers, written by Malcolm Gladwell. And he went in and he basically, he after he did all his research, he came up with this theory of the magic number of 10,000. It takes 10,000 hours for you to master something to a level that you can be, that you should be internationally well respected and considered a master at it. And he took it from sports to technological development to arts and crafts. You know, he just really broke down all of the major forces in any particular field, and he got to this magic number of 10,000 hours. And after that, I really started paying attention to what we call overnight successes. And when you really start paying attention to it, you really begin to see the backstory. Especially you look at somebody like a DMX, who was real big in the 90s and 2000s, hip-hop rap artist. It was 14 years before he even got a record deal, his first record deal. 14 years from the day he started rapping. And then you just go down the line where you're seeing all of these people, even a lot of those YouTube stars you mentioned, Joe. The social media stars, if you go back and look at their body of work, a lot of them have done hundreds and hundreds of videos. Some of them have even, you know, this, because I've done this myself, they might have done 100 or so videos, taken all of those down, and restarted a whole new account. Mm-hmm. You know, so you just, yep. You don't, and then they might have a team of people around them that even if they are just starting and this is their first official video, maybe four or five of the people on their team have done hundreds and hundreds or maybe thousands of videos. So that experience still goes into their product. I love what she said about overnight success not being truly overnight, you know, 10 years in the making. That's why we rarely see young people that truly blow up to that level. That's it. I mean, you think about it. How often do you hear about a 16 or a 17 or 18-year-old just becoming this super dominant force with no body of work behind them? You don't really ever see that, unless right. I'm just blind.
No, that it's what it is. It is what it is.
That was a great answer.
Thank you.
So, as far as your journey, because you've done a lot and you've come a long way and you've had your ups and your downs, your successes and your failures. Thus far, what is the greatest lesson that you've learned as an educator, a writer, and a filmmaker? And what has been the most rewarding about your journey so far?
I think that I've learned to ask questions and research. That's been the biggest thing, or one of the biggest things. And then another one was discovering who I was. You know, so many people will tell you what they think you are.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, that's been tough because it took such a long time. And then thinking what I wanted to do was corny, you know, because it wasn't the end thing. And
right.
I think as far as the most rewarding was me discovering myself in the whole process. And really realizing that, you know what, I don't know the answer, but I can find it.
Right.
And that's been, like, the biggest thing for me.
Okay. So as far as challenges, how were you able to overcome, or I should say, what were some of your biggest challenges, and how were you able to overcome those challenges to reassure yourself that you are good enough to do what you are pursuing?
Well, I think sometimes we're those challenges, especially if, you know, we're our own worst critics a lot of times, and
mm-hmm.
that myself mm-hmm. included. And I'm going to say that it's not always that I don't have that, you know. Sometimes that doubt will creep back in, but I have to muster up enough strength to say, you know what, I know I can do this. And for me, that's been the biggest thing, is that not thinking that I'm good enough to do it. When we were talking, we were talking about how we were athletes, and I was an athlete.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a choice between basketball scholarship and track. And I chose basketball, but I chose the wrong school. I got to the school,
right.
And the school was not at all what I thought it would be. I mean, at all. Constant reminders of things that shouldn't even have been an issue because we were there to play basketball. And I remember when I finally made the decision, the tough decision to leave the school, the coach said to me, "You'll never finish. You'll be barefoot and pregnant." That's what she said. "You'll never finish." I was the only person of color on the team. And that was one of our biggest issues because this was in the 90s. And, you know, in the South, sometimes those are some issues.
Right.
And I remember her saying that, and I was like, mm-mm, not me. And even if it was, I will still do it. I'm a Leo. All you got to do is just tell me that I can't, and I will, just to prove you wrong. Now, that doesn't mean that self-doubt doesn't come into play, but it means that I'm going to push harder just because you told me I couldn't do it. That's just the way that I'm built. But I remember her saying that to me, and I remember saying, no, that's not going to happen. So I went on, and I got really, really close to finishing my degree. And I was maybe three classes away when I ended up leaving school. And life kind of happened, and I decided to go back when my son was about 18 months old. That was tough, you know, because I had she was elementary, so I had an elementary school student, and I had a baby. And I'm like, oh, my gosh, you know, and I had my husband to help me out, but I was like, you know what, this is not going to hover over my head. So when I got that first degree, I'm like, this is for you, coach.
Right.
I got that second degree, I'm like, this is for you.
Right.
And when I got that third degree, and I'm like, oop, this one's for you.
Right.
So, so that's been the biggest thing for me.
Okay, now I can see, I love stories like that, because first of all, no adult has any business telling somebody who's under their care anything like that in the first place, and I've heard too many stories like that, so, like, adults like that should be ashamed of themselves for talking to the youth. Your job is to encourage people to be better, and because you didn't get what you wanted, you acted like a child. Basically.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and you, but I'm so happy and so proud that you showed her that she was wrong, and that's another person in line. Say hi, yeah, middle finger to you. She did it. She's successful in life. I hope you are happy in your life.
Thank you. Well, yeah, it was a reminder, and I was like, you know what? Mm-mm. But I've been my own. You know, my husband encourages me.
Mm-hmm.
My kids encourage me. Now, I don't let them read my work. Like, some things I do, but I can't stand when they stand over my shoulder because then it's that thing in my head, oh, it's not good enough. I need to work on it, and then I'll share it. But I've held myself back because I've been afraid of my own success for so long, and I finally had to have an epiphany and say, you know what? You can do this.
Right. Yes, ma'am. Speaking about the successes, I want to talk about your son and his latest success. So, as we said earlier, you've recently helped him publish his first book, The Boy Who Dreams Many Things. Can you tell us about your son's book, and whose idea was it to write the book? Was it his or yours, and how excited were you when just the whole idea came to fruition?
Sure. Well, it was my idea to write the book, but it was his idea. So I remember being in the kitchen and my son coming in while I'm cooking, telling me about this crazy dream he had. And it was wacky. I'm not going to lie. It was like, okay. I could imagine it being very vivid as he's telling me about it. And I'm like, you know what? You need to write that down. You know what? We need to make a book. And he's like, yeah, because it actually, he was 8 when he had the dream and when we started it. He was 9 because he was just about to turn 9 then when he finished writing the book. And on a scale from 1 to 10, I'm going to tell you, it was probably like a 20. And the reason why I was so excited was because my son is an artist. And when I say an artist, I mean, excuse me, he can draw things like, let's say, a dinosaur or your favorite character, like Spider-Man. He can draw those things, and they look really good. But that's because he's looking at the picture. And his biggest struggle in this was he couldn't look at pictures because they had to be his own. And so he got frustrated, and he'd stop for a while. And I was really, really proud of him because he eventually finished and wrote the book. And at first he was like, Mom, I don't know. They're not that good because I'm creating them myself, and it's not like me looking at somebody else's and creating this magnificent thing. And I had talked to a friend of mine. Actually, he is the artist who did the cover, the front and the back cover of my book. And he was saying to me, he's extremely talented. His name is Hector Curiel. And he's extremely talented. And he was saying to me, he said, you know what? He's young. If he can draw like this and look at those images and draw the lines just from looking at something, let him go through the process and discover how to create his own images. And sometimes they may not be as magnificent as everything else that he can look at, but eventually it's going to catch up and he's going to get it. And so I was really, really proud of him. Now, his book, it's for ages like 4 to 8, and it really encourages kids to think outside the box. So, I mean, it's kind of zany, you know. It's out there a little bit in terms of, like, the things. You know, he tried to make it rhyme and, you know, at the same time be kind of funny and just think about, because you know how we're often told people want us to live in a box most of the time, right? I mean, we do have our outside thinkers, right? But we have where they want us to conform to this, that, and the other. And this book, it doesn't do that. It's a small book, you know, because when you're talking about children, their attention spans are small. So he wanted to do something big, but something that's like, oh, I can get them to really think in, Mom. So that's kind of how he came up with his concept of his book, was actually through a dream, and then he decided to put it on paper.
Oh, that's excellent. That's excellent. So can you tell us the name of his book again and where people can buy it?
Absolutely. So the name of his book is The Boy Who Dreams Many Things, and you can find it on CreateSpace, or you can find it on Amazon. So if you type in, if you just go to Amazon and you type in The Boy Who Dreams Many Things, it'll bring you right to the cover of his book, and it'll say written and illustrated by E. Royal, and that's him.
Yes, ma'am. And also the same for your book. Where can people buy your book?
My book, they can buy the same place. You can get it on CreateSpace, or you can also go to Amazon.com, and same thing, type in half. You can type in just half of the title. So the entire title is Life Skills in College Planning Made Easy, Everything a Teen Needs to Know. But if you type in life skills and college planning, typically my book is the first one to come up, and you'll see it. It has a young girl on the front cover, and she is leaving high school and going on her way to college. And then you'll see my name right at the top, Patrice Torres. So if you type it in that way, you can find it. Or if you just do a traditional Google search, life skills and college planning made easy, it should come up as Amazon, and you'll find it right away on there.
Okay. Yes, ma'am. So our famous final question that we always ask every guest, and we try to be cool when we set it up. So put a little drum roll on it, kind of like this. Okay, drum roll, play. All right, don't do this to me, drum. See, he's asking. It's focused. There you go. See, delayed my question, but just made it more spicy, okay? So, if you were the all-powerful ruler of Black America, what would you change?
Yo,
and what would your message to the people be?
Yo,
what?
You got to go back and start that over. First off, you left off my trademark soul at the beginning.
Hey, man, you with all your little difficulties, okay?
Nah, you got to, and second, you were not hyped. You drained all of the energy.
Hey, you want to do it?
No, you do it.
No.
Right, see, you go. See, she agrees.
Hey, okay, see, look at you.
Go back and do it over, Joe. Go back and do it over.
Look at here, man. You don't know me, Patrick, okay? I'm coming to your house, okay? So, did that work for you? Did that work? Me saying so. Okay.
That was good. But now you got to keep going. Where's the rest?
So if you were the all-powerful ruler of Black America, what would you change and what would your message to the people be?
Okay. Well, I would change how our superpowers are viewed and appreciated. That's number one, because we are super.
Yes.
Collectively, we don't see our greatnesses and our abilities. So I think number two would be restoring our belief in ourselves and our abilities. I think that, you know, Black America, we've contributed so much to this country, you know, starting with us building it, you know. We built this country, right?
Right.
And we have done so many great things, and we're not recognized for those. So I would restore our communities to thriving ones. My message would be really simple. We need to lift each other up. We need to be great. We need to be strong. And then I would remind us to rise to the occasion. Every occasion, rise to it and act accordingly.
Hey, Patrick?
I don't know.
You better rise to the occasion, Patrick.
I rise to the occasion every day because Joe is, and I said this in the last interview, so I'm going to say it again. Joe is always being mean to me, to all of our fans.
I think our audience would disagree with you.
Nah, write him a bunch of mean letters and tell him to stop being mean to me. I would greatly appreciate it.
Guys, you know, I had to rise to the occasion the past couple of days. So,
yes, ma'am.
Do you mind if I share?
Go ahead.
It's kind of silly, but, I mean, you just never know. Okay, so I'm squeamish. I'm not even going to lie. I'm squeamish.
Mm-hmm.
And we have, my daughter has a pet bunny. And the little bunny is a little mini, he's a little miniature bunny. So he's very small. He's like 3 pounds. Mm-hmm. Well, he's a Holland Lop. He had pneumonia. So we've been trying to nurse him back to health. And how many Torreses does it take to get this poor bunny his shot? So with me being squeamish, now my daughter, she tried. She couldn't do it. I can't hurt him, Mom. I can't hurt him. My husband, who normally does things like this, was like, you're trying to, he's like, I can't pick it up. So he just kept on doing the same thing over and over. I'm like, okay, move. Get out of the way. So I go in there. As squeamish as I am, my hand is shaking like crazy, right? So I pull up the fur, and then I'm watching the little pocket because this is what the vet has told us to do. And I feel it, and then all of a sudden I'm like, I poke the needle in, and I'm like, okay, push. She's like, hurry. So I push, and I get the medicine in him, and I pull it out real quick, and then all of a sudden the bunny starts jumping, and he's like doing that little quick thing that they do and behind his ear scratching, and I'm like, whoo, I did it. But I had to rise to the occasion. It wasn't something I was normally used to doing, but I still had to rise to the occasion because he needed it to be done.
Right.
I feel you. I mean, I ain't never had to give a bunny a shot before, but I could imagine.
Gosh.
Now you just gave me a flashback when I had a pet chicken when I was growing up. So.
Wait.
Yeah, he didn't survive.
Pet chicken?
Yeah. Well, see, I was in like first and second grade, and but the first and second grade, we had to incubate the eggs, and after the chickens hatched, we got to take them home, and yeah, he didn't survive, but still, he just gave me a chicken flashback, so.
I've never heard of anybody having a pet chicken.
That's because you need to get more culture, Patrick, okay? Get more culture in you.
I do.
Ms. Patrice, can you tell people where they can find you on social media, your website, everything else, and one more time where they can get your book?
Absolutely. You can find me on Facebook at Patrice Torres. Just look it up. You'll see a picture of me. And then as far as getting my book, you can get it on at my website, www.patricetorres.com. You can go there and you'll find links to CreateSpace or Amazon, where it's available. So then, again, going to Amazon, you're going to type in Life Skills and College Planning Made Easy. And then the same thing for my son. I do have a section on my website where I'm encouraging young artists and just creative minds for the youth. And so my son's book is featured on there as well. The Boy Who Dreams Many Things, and you'll be able to find both of those on CreateSpace and Amazon.com.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you. Thank you. And all our listeners, you support, because she has great information, great things, and she's a great person, great personality.
Oh,
we've definitely had fun. No, thank you. Thank you a trillion, billion, skillion, gajillion times for your patience and just your passion and your excitement and everything that you bring to what you do, just as a person, as a mother, as an educator, as a filmmaker, as a writer, everything. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I appreciate it. It's been a pleasure. And,
yes, ma'am.
You know, it's like, what good is it? What good is it to know stuff if you don't share?
Yes, ma'am. Mm-hmm. Yes, ma'am. That's definitely the truth. So we're not going to hold you, because we'll talk to you all day. So we're not going to hold you no longer. Thank you once again for stopping by, and we'll definitely stay in touch with you.
All right. Definitely. Thank you so much.
Yes, ma'am. No problem.
All right.
Thank you. All right.
All
right.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Yeah. Hey, Patrick.
What up, mama?
You always trying to show why when the guests come on here. I told you about trying to show why when we get these guests on this dang on show. Nick, no, I'm just playing.
That's exactly what I was talking about. See, fans?
You can't take you nowhere.
Nah, you can't. You can't. I held up pretty good, though. I'm sick again, so, you know.
You sick again?
Yeah, you know, I'm always sick, at least once every week.
Pat got boogers.
I got weak constitution. Nah, I ain't snotty, that's you.
Yeah, I did have boogers.
Yeah, I heard
boogers.
You in the fix talking about your boogers, what that was 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, but boogers gone now, so.
It's still nasty.
Yeah, it is. So, you flip them across the room, see if somebody catch them. But
special.
But make sure y'all visit PatriceTorres.com. That's PatriceTorres.com. Learn more about Miss Patrice. She's definitely been gracious to us, and I got to check her out. You have to check her out. So with that being said, my name Joseph. I got my shirt off. His name Patrick. He got boogers. This is the Freedom Train podcast series, and we. Next time, and guess what? If your grandma keep telling you that you not live, remember, you is live. You is somebody. You is somebody. Be somebody and live. Peace out.